Hello, sugars. I know. Been a little bit of a break. We're going here, we're going there, you know? Stuff's been happening. But this episode, we're all new with Omar K. Mills from a wonderful, hilarious podcast called Tales from the Friend Zone, which you can find in the show links. You know what? I love that this is an African-American, born-again Christian. Like, if you look at him on paper and me on paper, you would think these two guys would not get along. And I think that this is such a great example of just people listening to people, having a great conversation and relating to one another and just having the best time. I love this guy so much. We recorded this episode way a while ago in September of last year. So some stuff might sound a little bit dated, but I just wanted to let you know. But I love what he's about. He's a celibate man, so he's not having sex. Like, he's got such an interesting story and it's not... Yeah, I think sometimes we think they border-green Christian. They think some people can be a little preachy. He's not. He's so authentic and admits when he's, you know, doing it right and admits when he's doing it wrong, and he's human. And it's just, I love him. This is such a great, great show. And he's funny as hell. So that's what's going on. Also, just so you know, the outro of this episode is going to be a special announcement. So Jake Anthony will be joining me. So you've got to listen to the whole episode to find out what that is about, sugars. But some big stuff coming that's starting this week, especially this Friday, hint, hint, for Dear Maddie and Poodle. But you can listen to that in the outro of the show. And if you don't want to listen, you can just look at the show notes and you can find the information and the links there. But it might be a new show. That's all I'm going to say, sugars. Enjoy this episode with Omar. He's also a hot black man. So, you know, this was everything I wanted, sugars. Just saying. Who loves comic books? I can't. I need a drink. Oh, and recording. And good. It should be recording. Yeah, what? I think it's a podcast. Yes, this is going. You'll see little waves that mean we're recording. Welcome to Dear Maddie Show, everybody. This is Matt Marr. It's kind of a nice, almost rainy day in Los Angeles, which never happens. And I'm here with Omar Mills. Omar, how are you?
I'm great, Maddie. Thanks for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Of course, your voice, I'm telling you, it's like smooth velvet. I just feel like... I mean, don't get me wrong. I love a handsome black man, my boyfriend, a very wonderful man. But then with that voice of yours, I'm like, ooh, Lord Jesus, help me. I need a cigarette and I don't even smoke. But anyway, I'm just saying. Welcome, Omar. Now, thank Omar you. Mills, Tales from the Friend Zone. And that's a little teaser, Tales from the Friend Zone. We'll talk about that in a second. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Really appreciate being here. I know we were talking before we started recording. I really wish I'd met you when we were out at Podcast Movement.
Really, I know.
Wish we'd met there.
Yeah, I think we would have been fast. Well, we already are fast friends, internet
Absolutely.
Friends, but I think it would have been. I think you and I, and I say this from listening to your own podcast, and I feel like you and I, we just like to laugh, which is
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah, man.
That is like the... So that was it. So your podcast is Tales from the Friend Zone. Let me say that again for everybody because I fucked it up. Tales from the Friend Zone. That's, first of all, that is one of the best names of a podcast I've ever heard. Anything I've ever heard. Like a book... A show, like, from somebody who lives in Los Angeles, I'm like, boom, wrap that shit up and sell it to a network. It is fucking great.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. So anyway, okay, Omar, tell us about you, sugar, where you're from, where you grew up, how this podcast happened. What if you're into white ginger guys? You're not. You're straight, but that's fine. I know. I already know you're straight because we're going to talk about it. Whatever. My life. My boyfriend's going to kill me when he hears this. He's going to be like, you disrespecting me. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm just carried away by the voice. Anyway, sorry, Omar. So where are you? you're like, I can't. Right. Now, where are you from?
I'm originally from D.C.,
That's where my boyfriend is from. How
really?
Funny. Yeah. He's from D.C.
Yeah, Washington, D.C. Grew up in two parts, Northwest D.C. and Northeast D.C. So depending on, you know, where you were, and mind you, it's not like that now, but back then when we were, you know, the murder capital, if I was in Northeast, you were terrified. But if you were in Northwest, there was a little bit. That's where, you know, you start heading up towards Silver Spring, and there's a little bit of money over there, so it was a little safer. Mm. So depending on, you know, what day of the week it was, which parent I was staying with, you know, I was either trying not to get shot or, you know, not worrying about getting shot. So grew up in D.C., born in the 70s, but, you know, grew up in the 80s.
Yeah.
And so latchkey kid, parents divorced when I was about two. And so I couldn't really go outside when I got home. So I'm terrible at anything athletic. Because by the time I started, I was maybe 11, the first time I touched a basketball. So you can imagine how that is growing up in a black neighborhood. You're the one black kid that can't play ball. That's me. Yeah, I'm that guy. I'm him. And so
you're the one.
I'm the one. Yeah. When people meet me, they go, "Wait, there actually is one." Yes, it is me.
Do you like basketball?
I love basketball. I would trade everything I could do for, you know, a few more inches of height and some athletic ability. I had none. I mean, all the one sport I was able to play in high school was cross country track. You know, no one's coming out to watch anybody run 3 miles. No one's doing that.
Even at the Olympics.
Yeah, no one. Nobody came and saw that. Nobody came to see that. Now, mind you, if I could run fast, which, you know, God didn't give me any of that either. He's like, no black talents for you. You know, no basketball. No.
No. Nothing.
Can speed.
Can you sing?
I can sing a little bit, but, you know, as you get older, that goes.
Yeah, that goes too.
Yeah, that goes away too. So, you know, again, I missed my window. In fact, every single thing. Like, you ask, like, how does this podcast come about? This is what formed the friend zone. You know, my whole life became this. All right, I got to make up for this thing that didn't go well. You know, and I realized it like a day too late. By the time I realized, oh, man, I should go out there and play basketball because the girls like these guys that are playing basketball, but I'm 11. These kids have been playing since they were three.
And could you not go out because, I mean, really, was your neighborhood as a young kid, it just wasn't safe for you to go out and play basketball? Was that the reason, or just kind of your parents wouldn't let you go out, or it's just they wanted you to stay home and be safe when they weren't home?
It was more so. Now, back in those days, you know, we're talking, you know, the 80s, where even if you're staying home by yourself, there's no way anybody could have known about it, you know, short of your neighbor looking out the window, because it was all pre-internet. So there was none of the precautions and things. And so it was in many ways safer than it is now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there were, you know, D.C. was legit murder capital of the world. And, you know, I had a single mom, and all she wanted was, OK, look, you got one rule. Don't go outside until I get home. And she wasn't getting home until the street lights are on by the time she's home. And you know that rule. You can stay outside until the lights come on. And then when the lights come on, you're coming inside. Home. So my best friends growing up were He-Man, Lion-O of the Thundercats, G.I. Joe. These were my buddies. You know, Adam
Those are my
West.
Buddies too.
Yeah, exactly. This is who raised me. You know, Adam West and Burt Ward in reruns raised me.
Sugar, we watch the same
shows.
Because I couldn't play basketball either. Well, maybe you're my same. I'm 37, so I was born in the 70s and grew up in the 80s as well.
Same thing. Same exact thing. In my 40s. But, yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, that was my era coming up. And, you know, this is why I'm a creative. I write and draw and sing and write stories and all those types of things, because you put a basketball in my hand and it's failure.
What were you like in high school? Like, well, I want to know two things. What type of kid were you in high school? And, like, what were you into and stuff? And then how was your dating life in high school?
Oh, man. I was a kid who, I'm both of my parents at the same time. It's the craziest thing. So my mom, big creative. Both parents actually were on the radio. Father had a sports talk show in the D.C. area. My mother was on, what's the name of the station? It's long since become something else. But at the time, it was WDJY. And so she worked weekends, and that was sort of a supplement to, she worked in D.C. government, you know, in the mayor's office. And then on the weekends, she would do her disc jockey job. So many a weekend, I spent in that studio with G.I. Joes all around me, watching her spin records for weeks and weeks at a time. So it was cool. But she would work 4 hours, you know, on this is when she got that weekend shift. When she started, she was midnight, you know, so if she messed up, nobody knew and that sort of thing.
Yeah. But
that was much of, you know, my upbringing hanging out with her. And so on the one hand, you've got these parents that have these opportunities, these jobs that put them front and center. Mm-hmm. You know, so on the one hand, I was fearless. I didn't, you know, I'd go out and I'd try anything. But because my mom is super sensitive, I was that kid. Fearless 1 minute, but if you hated what I did, I'd go in the corner and cry. Mm. You know, and be, you know, being real sensitive about it. So no tangible athletic ability or physical attributes that would give you an opportunity to gain some confidence. I wasn't tall. One particularly strong or fast or any of those things that you just, if you go and play a sport in high school, you're the man.
Mm-hmm.
So none of that's going to, all my stuff was hidden. It was cerebral. Like I was glee club. I was chess club. I was, you know, that kid. And growing up in DC schools, up until I went to my middle school, but elementary school, and this is just, this is one of those things when you grow up and I don't know, I don't want to make a generalized statement about, you know, African-American culture, but I'll say it this way, at least from my experience, if you weren't speaking in black idiomatic speech, if you weren't talking, you know, slang this minute or that minute, or if you were, you know, God forbid you said too much that showed you read a book, you were ostracized in many a way when I was coming up. You know, in fact, I've seen this with my younger cousins. They will speak differently to their friends and in their groups to fit in, because you don't want to be that kid, you know, because what we were told was, oh, why are you talking white? Why are you acting white, you know, coming up? So to fit in, you'd say, okay, well, I can't do that. And that was much, you know, much of my upbringing. You didn't want to be that kid and be ostracized by your own group. So my talents and different things that I was good at did not lend themselves to being celebrated in much of my own circles. And so much of what I did coming up was really trying to fit in or trying to be accepted by a group that honestly, I think there's more acceptance now. I've kept in touch with some of those folks.
Mm-hmm.
There's more acceptance now because we're all older. And, you know, and again, when you're in high school, junior high school, nobody has any sense. But because I was so sensitive, it became this story where each slight, either imagined or otherwise, became this thing that I had to make up for.
Mm-hmm.
So now you take that and you translate that into a dating life. And you say, okay, here's a guy that isn't afraid to try anything, which meant I'm not afraid to talk to any woman I see. But once she destroys my confidence, I go and cry. And now the next person I meet is going to make up for the one that I just failed. And then that list just gets longer and longer and longer.
Bless your heart.
Yeah, and then you get into this thing where every time you try to meet somebody new, it's a, you know, they're never going to live up to the mantle of you're going to solve years and years and years of pain. But I'm too young at the time to even realize what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go into these things doing too much. So I didn't learn at all because, again, latchkey, single mom, weekend dad, didn't really get taught how to even approach or talk to women in your confidence or in your strength or taking your weaknesses and say, okay, here's what things not to do and here's how you can be the best possible version of yourself. Never really developed that until much, much later. And what's unfortunate about when you get to my age now, I can speak to it. I can say, hey, here's why I fail at this. But when your emotions kick in, you become that little kid again.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to make up for things that did not go so well in the past. So much of my high school dating life was this sad cycle of trying to make of do-overs. This time it's going to be different. You know, that if ever there was a title for, you know, my life as a teenager, that would be it. This time it's going to be different.
This time it's going to be. Well, I think it's so weird that. Well, not, I don't think it is weird, actually, but that you talk about that because my boyfriend has actually spoken to that as well, that he was good at sports, but he talks about he had to be. But he was super interested in he was super interested in science and like arts and art stuff. And I know that I started a summer camp, and one of the things in our summer camp is that we're really trying to, it's a leadership camp for LGBT youth, and we're
nice.
Really trying to focus on getting just Black kids to come to the camp because so, and then, and we, he talked, we were, I was asking him about it, and he's like, well, he's like, besides the whole LGBT thing, which is a different thing for people in my race, he said, but we don't go to camp. He said, the only camps, he said, I went to like a leadership camp and I got made fun of. So I went to a basketball camp because that's the camps you go to, you right. know, and you got to do that kind of stuff. I mean, I think it's better, I hope, with people like, first of all, with our president, where somebody is, definitely not. I mean, he is pretty good athletics, right. I think, but somebody who's an intellectual or like Neil deGrasse Tyson. And so I love that he's like just a total nerd and like celebrated in geek culture. So it is getting better. But I think, and that's what's good about what you're doing, is I think that, because I realized too, and as in talking to you and listening to you, and I think it's my own biases, I think that there are a lot of people, again, talking about stereotypes, a lot of people assume that a Black man is going to be good at dating, because you often assume they're either like going to be like a player or they're going to be super smooth. So, and that's a terrible generalization. But then also imagine, like, did that put more pressure on you where you felt like all your other friends are trying to act the part of what they're supposed to be and that wasn't working for you?
You know what's wild about that is the... I think that's true to a large extent. Don't get me wrong. So you grow up, and you, again, we're from the same era. So who was the smoothest Black man on TV during the time in the 80s? Probably Philip Michael Thomas, so Miami Vice. But yep. Don Johnson was just as smooth, mm-hmm. at that time. You go to Empire Strikes Back. It's Billy Dee Williams. Yep. But Han Solo was smooth in his own right. So there were guys that you could look at and say, I'm supposed to be like that guy. But by the time I went to middle school, it was probably the most racially diverse time that I was in school. When I was in elementary school, and so for me, 1 through 6, or pre-K or whatever, up through sixth grade, it was in Northeast D.C., mm-hmm. school that no longer exists. It was called Keene Elementary, and it was predominantly, I don't know that there were any Caucasian students there at all. If there were, I didn't see them. By the time I went to school with Caucasian students, it was in my middle school. I went to Alice Deal Junior High in D.C. Now, this is Northwest D.C., so you're going to get more of a diverse, template of students mm-hmm. in the school. So I go so far as to call it a split. Now, I don't know that it was like an even split, but it was probably about 51-49%, and then some sprinkling some others. Mm-hmm. And the first kids that I met that befriended me, because I had to take three different buses to get to school, primarily because my mother was like, well, I don't want you, I guess, recognizing my kid's not like these other kids, but he's trying to be. So I'm going to send him to a school where there are people more like him, and sends me over three buses to go to Alice Deal. And the first kids who were nice to me were the Caucasian kids. And so I get pulled in with them, and these become my buddies. And so the examples that I had to live up to were all the smooth white kids. Mm. And so I'm trying to be like them, because this is the circle that I'm in. And it wasn't until I went to high school that I started coming back around. So when I went to high school, you're close. It's like 88, 89, somewhere around that time. I mean, mind you, middle school, 7, 8, 9. Ninth is technically your freshman year of high school. But for me, we were seniors at the middle school. And then I wasn't a quote-unquote freshman again until I went to 10th grade. Yeah, okay. Sophomore. So around that time, again, your cadre of students grows. And so the diversity grows and gets different, because you've got a bunch of middle schools coming into one high school. Mm-hmm. And so I met new folks. And so my circle became more diverse. In middle school, it was primarily the white kids who were nice to me. By the time I'm in high school, I know all of them from middle school, but now I'm starting to make some Black friends. But oddly enough, the Black friends I'm making were all geeks and nerds like me.
That's
so
awesome.
So it was, I don't know that there was, I've ever known a time during that period where any of those stereotypes ever really made it into my circle. I was aware of them, but the folks that I kept close to me were just people that I was cool with. I never really thought about
That's wonderful. I can already tell this show could be long. I could talk to you for 2 days. Bed. Because we do have some questions, but I still want to get to. So talk about Tales from the Friend Zone, the best title in the world. I love it so much. I listened to your first episode. I think that we're both trying to do very similar things, is that we want to make content that inspires people and gets them to think, but we have to do it in an entertaining way, because, I mean, you made me cry, dude. Like, so talk about the show and the genesis of it and what it's about.
It, like everything else, it came out of, I don't want to call it failure. Excuse me. I don't want to call it failure because I'm trying to get myself out of the habit of saying, well, this failed, because we were talking about Disney earlier. Walt says you basically fail your way to success. You know, when I think about, like, you know, his path or Charles Schulz and all the people that I look to as heroes, they all kind of, you know, they had early failures that led to massive success. So for lack of a better word, I'm going to call it a failure that it was born out of, but it's not done. So I want you to hear that I'm not trying to say that, oh, well, this thing over here failed, and so it produced this. But it started out of something that did not go the way I had planned. And so we go all the way back to, again, I'm a creative. The first thing that I made was a book. I had been wanting to write a book for years and had what I call a bunch of false starts. The book was sci-fi, fantasy, you know, stuff. And what's interesting about this book is that there's a show on Netflix now that everybody's raving about that is essentially the same premise for the book that I came up with that did not sell. It's driving me crazy. It's called Stranger Things. You've probably heard about it.
I've already obsessed over it.
Yeah, exactly.
I downloaded the font. Like, it's a thing. I love that show.
I want to bang my head against a wall because I wrote that show. I swear to you, I wrote it. It drives me insane. I'm like, oh, man, if I had just, you know, if I had come up with it sooner, or if I had done this or done that. It's the same exact premise. And I remember sitting there watching that show going, are you kidding me? I mean, down to the age, the girl in my book is 9. The girl in that show was 11. I mean, like I'll send you a link to the books on Amazon. It drives me insane.
Well, we'll put that in the show notes too, because if you like Stranger Things, listeners, then would like the book.
It's different. It's slightly different, but there's enough similarity. Like Stranger Things gets more Stephen Kingish, you know, in terms of its feel. Mine is a little less horror, more Avengers. You know, and it's flow. So think about that only if it were in that same. And again, like I said, I'll get you the links to all of that. But put that book out in January of 2015 and just expected it to magically sell. Like when I did it, it was like, OK, this is it. This is going to I'm going to now be able to get these women and boats and, you know, do all the things like I saw P. Diddy doing the videos. This is now I'm going to get rich off of this. And it, you know, I don't even think my mom finished reading it. So, you know, maybe 30 copies sold. And I'm going, what, you know, you're sad. Again, I'll try anything. And then when it doesn't go the way I expected, it's like, okay. So I came back and I thought about it and I said, all right, well, what did I do wrong with this idea? And I've talked to some folks and they said, well, do you have an audience? But I got a buddy of mine who is also an indie writer, and she's got some insane amount of Twitter followers, something like 40,000. And I'm going, what'd you do? Because she put stuff up on Kickstarter and guys run to bring her money. And I said, okay, well, you know, apart from being attractive and, you know, showing some things that I don't have to show online. Yeah. That will draw some of these, you know, people to bring you their money. What things did you do? And she said, well, I spent a lot of time building my audience up. And I said, okay. And I'm like, well, how'd you do that? And she's like, well, I had different techniques and different things. But if you took the time to build your audience up, the next time you put something out, you have an audience there that will want to go and consume your product. And I said, that makes sense. So I went and I thought about, like, okay, well, what can I put out there for free that is something I can, you know, use to do the exact same thing that she just talked about? So that was where the radio drama podcast came out of. And I shouldn't even call it a podcast because it's not like this. It's more, I'm just using the podcast medium to get it out there. But it's really sort of like an audiobook on steroids. I've got various voice actors and immersive sound effects and so forth. And a single show might take me 10 to 12 hours to actually edit. But I did a bunch of those. It's called Thamro, and it's out there.
Spell that for people. Oh. I'll put in the show notes. But okay.
Thamro. I actually came up with it by combining Thor. I came up with this character when I was 15. It's just Thor and Omar together. Thor was my favorite superhero growing up. And I said, I want to make a character that, again, growing up on He-Man and Thundercats and so forth. Mm-hmm. So this character was born out of that. And I said, this is something I've had since I was 15. I'll just take him and redo him now and do it in this audio format. And that's where that came out. I didn't mind giving that away for free because, again, it was a character that was just sitting in my, you know, vault that I'm like, okay, I can put that out there and do something with it. And the thought was, okay, that'll start to develop an audience. There are no barriers to entry. It's a podcast. All you need is your phone. And I just need to throw some marketing behind it. Well, a few more people listened to that than bought the book, but not to the degree that I was really thinking that it would.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea hits me, you know what? You got to go to where people who make podcasts are. And so that's what led me to go to Podcast Movement this past July, you know, in Chicago. So I go to that. And I'm seeing guys like Pat Flynn get up and he's like, yeah, I get about 90,000 downloads per show. And I'm looking at my download numbers going, well, I don't get 90,000 downloads.
I'm like, I got 9. I'm happy.
Yeah. And like, I'm thinking, oh man, you know, so again, sitting in these breakout sessions and just feeling like you've just failed at every, like, oh man, like this, how do these guys get 150,000, and Kevin Smith comes up and he's speaking to us, and I'm like, look, he makes it look so easy. You know, I saw somebody, I was sitting close to the front when Kevin Smith spoke, and a woman lost her mind trying to break to the front of the stage as he was leaving to hand him something, and the security tried to stop her, and he, you know, kindly took it from her and walked in the back. And I'm thinking, man, folk are desperate to get out there and to get noticed and get launched. Mm-hmm. But you know, I get that, because we tie our hopes and our dreams and our different things to these opportunities.
Yeah.
And so when they don't go as planned, you're like, okay, well, now what? Well, while I was out there, you know, I'm talking to different folks, and everybody that I told about this, I met one other guy that did radio drama, you know, style podcasts. And we're at breakout sessions talking to guys at Spotify and at Amazon. And while everybody who I told about that idea for Thamro, they were like, oh man, that's, first they said, wow, that's different. Then they said, well, that sounds like a whole lot of work to edit, but you know what, man? Good on you. Keep doing it. And then they were like, well, wow, that's nice for you. Let me know how that goes. So there was no sense that anybody else would either say, you know, I should do that too. Or somebody saying, oh, I know about this other one that's like that. Literally, out of everybody I met, out of hundreds of people, I met one other guy that does that style of show, and he does most of his live. So he's getting some money, you know, doing it from, you know, renting out venues and doing it, you know, all together, kind of like a glorified table read, whereas mine is more edited. And so when that hit me, I said, okay, I'm pouring all this time and this effort into this thing for free to generate an audience that will hopefully buy books or merchandise and so forth. And that's not growing. It's grown more than the book audience did, but not enough given the amount of time I have to put into it. So then it dawned on me, and I said, well, as I'm listening to different people and they're saying, well, if you want to start a podcast, you know, talk about what you know. And I'm like, man, I don't really know anything else other than this. This is what I know. And I'm like, well, what works? What works all the time? You know, because most of the people that I noticed that had success, that were getting paid, that had, you know, the NPR backing, or were, you know, what have you, were the Kevin Smiths of the world who had done something else to generate a name And then they decided to podcast, and therefore they can say, hey, I'm doing a podcast, and you've got a built-in audience of hundreds of thousands of people. Uh-huh. Or some organization, NPR, says, hey, Serial is great. We're going to put this out, and it's going to get thousands upon thousands of downloads because we're NPR, and we can top promote it because we're connected. Mm-hmm. And so you see a lot of that type of thing going on. That's what hit me sitting at Podcast Movement. And I said, okay, well, the only way that I can do a podcast that I think will generate the listeners and grab the ears is if I do something that is tried and true, that connects with everybody. The problem with, I think, with Famro was, unless you're a nerd geek that loves fantasy and sci-fi, that's not going to really be your thing. You're not going to just be naturally drawn to that. Whereas mm-hmm. with relationships, okay, well, you know, I'll go and listen to that. But the problem there is there's a gajillion relationship shows. There's nothing new. There's no new ground to break there. Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to talk about relationships from the vantage point where I know something, I've never really had one that's been successful for all the reasons that I told you. Mm-hmm. So, but I could speak to one, a relationship topic type show about, here's why I failed at this. Can you, guest on the show, advise me on how to get out of this, you know, this cycle, this friend zone mm-hmm. of failure? I can speak to it logically, but when I'm emotionally invested, mm-hmm. you know, I can't seem to see my way through it. And so that was what it was born out of. And it's weird because it feels like everything that we've talked about, even going back to growing up in high school and so forth, all seemed like it was pointing to that moment, mm. you know, where it's not just about the relationship, you know, with, you know, a young lady that I'm trying to take out. It's also like a relationship with myself. Mm-hmm. Because my feeling is you're never really single. If you're not dating somebody or married to somebody, you should be dating you.
Amen, sugar.
And
amen.
Therein, I think, lies the bulk of my issues. I've never really dated me. And the mm-hmm. person that I think you end up with is the person you're willing to break up with yourself to date. Because you say, you know what? I'm awesome, but you're more awesome. So I'm willing to break up with me to be with you.
That's a good way to put it.
That hit me, oddly enough, as I was working on this show. It's kind of just organically come out of that. And that's one of the other major lessons that I've got just from doing it is I've been forcing it. I think we talked about that a little bit. You know, I was doing too much, wanting it too badly. Mm-hmm. And that's not just the show, but the things that the show was supposed to bring about are the, you know, we all want to be affirmed and loved for what we put out there. And when it doesn't happen the way we want, that can be devastating. That can be, you know, a thing that you have a difficult time from bouncing back from. And I think that to a large extent, if you're able to take those experiences and that pain and turn it into something positive, mm-hmm. then it not only helps you, but it helps anybody else that comes along. My hope in doing this show is that there are other, you know, there are other folks, you know, guys and gals out there who would listen to it and would say, oh man, I do that too. I didn't realize I was doing that.
Oh yeah, that's what we're hoping for. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. So in a weird kind of way, it became that, but it was supposed to be an avenue for me to just sell some books. So again, it's you never really know, you know, where things are going to take you, but that's where it came out of.
Well, I love that. Was a I can just listen to you forever. I just get caught up in your voice. Okay, now we are going to answer questions. We are. Okay. And if we have three, well, and we'll see, because I don't like to edit the show. So if we go too long, I'll just take out a question. Because okay. I still want to ask you this, like, and hopefully it's okay to ask. You sit in your email, totally. So if not, I'll edit out. But I think because you have chosen, like, because you're a born-again Christian.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Love it. And you also are abstaining from sex.
Yeah.
So, like, what is that like for a handsome, you know, because I'm this lady, you know, I got my new perfume on, I got my hair done, or I got a wig, I don't know, I got something. And then here's this handsome man with this voice, and we just finished a good dinner.
Right.
And I'm ready for the nightcap, sugar. And then what's it like for you when you drop that, like, but seriously, you know, I've had one of my good friends, Hillary, she's She's a born-again Christian who she lives in Atlanta now, but she lived in L.A. Right. As an actor. And she would talk about kind of the problem of dating, you know, of actors. And I have a couple of really good friends that are Mormon, too. And they talk about the problems with dating. So for you, what has that been like? How long have you been a born-again Christian? So how is that, like, has that dramatically changed dating for you? Or what's it been like?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, Manny, when I tell you I've been a born-again Christian since I was about 9 years old.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Bible nerd my whole life. And it shapes a lot of things. So here's what that does. When you get saved that young, mm-hmm. I've said this to a number of folks. I feel like when you come to know the Lord later in life, you appreciate him more. Because mm-hmm. you got more to be forgiven for that you're aware of. You've done more.
You're like, ooh, I did. Yeah, thank you for loving me.
Oh, thank you. Exactly. When you come to know him at 9, what's the worst thing you've done? Talk in class, maybe, you know, or something. You know, uh-huh. So God becomes, and again, I don't want to speak for anybody other than me, but for me, God was a cosmic genie. You know, he was Aladdin's lamp. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a fireproof suit. Ooh, if I accept Jesus, I won't go to hell. That's awesome. You know, let me do that. In fact, that growing up in the Black community, much of the way that you're told about this, at least where I was coming up, it was all fire and brimstone. You know, my own mother was like, you need to get saved. And I said, okay, saved from what? She was like, well, you're going to hell. So you need to, you know, accept Jesus. Awesome. Okay, let me do that. And I remember I was sorting laundry. And when I prayed and I accepted the Lord. Now, mind you, later on, I would understand more of what it meant. And, you know, get deeper into it and actually started to study and started getting into Bible studies and just going through those lessons that you go through coming up, knowing that. But what it does in terms of what you would pray about or pray for, and again, you're still you, so you just have had a heart change. You've had a mental shift. Yeah. So God was, oh, okay, I want some stuff. Let me rub this Bible and make 3 wishes. And what's weird about it is when you're that young and you're new in Christ, a lot of that stuff actually happens. So you pray about some stuff and then it starts to happen. Now, I don't know if it was God actually answering it or if it was just coincidence or whatever it was, but stuff I was asking for was starting to come about. Not all of it. You know, now if I prayed for superpowers, I wasn't getting that, but some other stuff that I wanted to see come about was starting to happen. And so for a long time, you know, he was just a cosmic genie. He was a solution, you know, to a problem. He was convenient. You know, wow, if I do this, you know, I can avoid hell and I can get whatever I want. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I've always said this. This is why I don't really self-identify as a Christian more so than I do a disciple. Because I feel like anybody can be a Christian. Anybody can get out of bed and say, I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. And it costs you nothing. Whereas if you're a disciple, it costs you everything. Every single thing is what you lay down when you decide to go that path. Mm-hmm. And it changes the way that you go about and pursue the things that you're interested in. Because that path is a lot more painful, but it's pain that you will embrace. You say, you know what? That's going to suck if I got to go through that. But I wouldn't change it because I like who I'm going to become on the other side of this thing. And that's very different than saying, you know, I don't want anything that's going to hurt, you know, at all, but I want all the benefits, you know, of following something like this. So when you look at it through the goggles of a disciple relative to relationships, so let me bring it back to that. A Christian relationship for me, again, I don't speak for anybody. This is just me. A Christian relationship and Christian dating for me was, Lord, I want a godly woman. You know, I want a Proverbs 31 type woman. And so I'm going to rub this Bible 3 times, and I want her to look like, so then you start getting into that outward show. I want her to look like Janet Jackson riding a unicorn with a little mix of Beyonce, and you know, I want her to sing like this, that, and the other, and Jesus' name, amen. Mm-hmm. And when it doesn't happen, now you're mad because you convince yourself, well, but I prayed, and this is supposed to be magic, and I'm supposed to pray, and God gives me what I want. That's how this works. Why did I get saved if this isn't how it works? Whereas from the vantage point of a disciple, you would say, Lord, I would sure love to have this. This is something that I want. But what do you want? Mm-hmm. Because you're better at being God than I could ever be. Mm-hmm. And so since you made me and since you know the path that I'm supposed to go down, let me table what it is I think I want in favor of the things that I know that you want, and let me get excited about that stuff, as opposed to trying to make you bless the crap that I came up with. It's like, my dream stinks, but his dream's awesome. And I got to start loving his dream for me more than I love my dream for me. And that's hard. So what happens is, your whole life, again, from 9 years old coming up, is this mix of, I want to do what I want to do and have God bless it, plus, you know what, I should really do what God wants me to do and just accept what that is and get good and get happy about that and embrace that. It's that mix, and it depends on the day. So there have been days where I've gone out and I'm like, you know what, F everything. I just want what I want. I'm going to go out and I want it to be fine, and I want this, and we're going to go out, we're going to do this. And when you're abstaining, what happens is, the longer that streak goes, the more, the harder it becomes. And I don't mean that in the jokey way that you might, let me backtrack that.
I wasn't going to make it.
My mind immediately went there.
Just for the record, this is the first time on the Dear Maddie show that I was not the first person to make a dick joke. It's always me. And I just want to say, Patrick Heim, one of my good friends, if you're listening, take note, I wasn't the first. Omar Mills made a dick joke before Matt Maher. Yes. The born again Christian.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
That's great.
Oh, man. What happened, you know, it becomes more difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it becomes more difficult to date and to go forward in these things, because you're like, all right, well, if the point is marriage, because I can't do anything, you know, according to scripture, I can't do anything unless I get married. And I don't have any issue with that, but it makes it challenging, because there's maybe two other people on the planet that think like that. And so you go on Match.com or eHarmony or what have you, and it's that filter, you know, will bring up two or three names after a while. And you're saying, well, okay, well, I can't do that, because, you know, there won't be anybody to date. And so you take that off. I can speak to it from the profile perspective. When I first came up with, when I first got on Match, I had a friend of mine who, oddly enough, she's, I don't want to go so far as to call her an atheist, but she might as well be. And we were taking a master's program together, and she was telling me, like, look, you know, you just need to get on Match. That she had met her future husband. He wasn't her husband at the time, but they eventually got married. And oddly enough, she married a guy who was born again, which I think was funny given the advice she gave me at the time, you know, and the things she was saying about it. So clearly some things shifted. But anyway, she goes, you need to get on Match and sign up for 6 months and don't put any of that born again stuff on there. She's like, that's just going to, you know, limit your options. He's like, I get all that. Nobody needs to hear any of that up front. You just go in there and you just put your picture up and you do this. And I said, okay. So I did that at first. Wasn't getting a whole lot of bites. And eventually, when I moved to Florida, I did get some and went out on a couple of dates. And what happens is, you go out, by the time you get to that, if you get to that fifth date and you haven't really told them who you are and that you're abstaining, you're born again, you're this, you've just kind of been the best representation of yourself as opposed to who you truly are, it's going to come up. You know, it's absolutely going to come up when, you know, there's going to be a moment.
Well, and also too, like, especially dating now, I just want to say, it's not like, because I'm from Oklahoma. So if you're in Oklahoma and you're 25 and you're, you know, as all of us used to say, I would say, I'm not having sex, you know, I'm abstaining for whatever reason. That's a little bit more normalized because there's more people. But when you're 44, in your 40s, people are like, well, you can't tell me you're a virgin. You know what I mean? You probably have had sex before, so you're stopping. They don't get it. And so it seems like it just seems like there's probably fewer of you that are abstaining.
Yeah, there's not a lot. And you do get a lot of that. You get folks that say, well, you know, I've had a buddy of mine, a coworker, he goes, are you like AC Green? Now, AC Green, former Los Angeles Laker player, was well known for his stance, you know, on purity. And he was like, are you him? It was his code way of asking me, are you a virgin? And here's my thing on that. I've never gone all the way with anybody. Again, I'm saved when I was 9. You can do that math. If I get saved at 9 and you start abstaining at 9, guess what? But if you've never been married, you've never done anything.
You've never done anything.
But I have done what I call warming by the fire. So I don't know if it's true virginity. I don't know. Maddie, I have warmed by many a flame. Yes, sir. So I don't know if it counts, man. I don't know if it counts. I might be the 40-year-old kind of virgin. I don't know, man. It's I don't know what box to put that in. I know that there have been moments, and I talk about one of these on one of the podcast episodes where I was going out with a woman for better on match. By the time we got to the fifth date, she had done the whole code for, hey, you know, I'm great at massages. And I'm like,
oh Lord,
you know, oh, awesome. Right. And it, like, I don't know what that means, but played dumb, ended up in a situation where I'm on top of her and she's like, all right, well let's do this. And I'm going, I can't. And she's like, why? I'm like, well, because I'm abstaining. And she's like, basically, then why are you on top of me? And I'm like, I don't know, because I, you know, just wanted to get near the fire. Now I'm in the flame. And
I've been there. I've been with a guy. They're like, I'm not gay. And I'm like, well, my penis is in your mouth. So I'm going to say that you are. No, I've been there. So I get it.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, what do you do?
And yeah, so you're like, they're like, I don't, she like thinks, yeah, right. You're really upset. Yeah,
whatever.
But then she probably thinks you're lying to her.
Yeah. Yeah, they think it's something else. They think it's, and that's one of the major dangers of this. So, apart from just, let's say I go through with it and I do it, and there's the obvious dangers, the physical dangers of things that can come about on that, or the consequences that can come about. You know, you might get her pregnant, what have you. All that aside, we haven't even gotten into the emotional damage you can do to somebody by not following through.
Yeah,
because I know why I'm not doing it, but to her, well, you know, I guarantee you. That woman left out of here wondering if there was something wrong with her. Guaranteed, because I wanted to warm by the fire. You know, and so that's where the challenge becomes the hardest, when you feel like you're doing things. Anytime I slip off of my path, you know, that, you know, again, nobody made me do it. It's, you know, it's a decision that I made and it's one that I live with. Mm-hmm. But every time I deviate from that, it potentially could damage somebody else. And that's some of the danger in that. The other part of it is, when you've gone this long, if I blow it now, what was the previous, you know, 40 some odd years for? Mm. What did I do it for? You know, why'd I wait, you know, if I didn't do it? So it becomes that sort of a challenge. You know, it's dangerous. It's, you know, Russian roulette with your life in a way. Mm. I'm putting a lot of stock in this Jesus thing being real.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would hate to die and have God say to me, why did you wait? You know, mm-hmm. I sent all these women, you know, that would suck. But if I'm right, if this is the way that you're supposed to do it, then the rewards on that, I think, will be very great, because when I finally meet the right one and, you know, can have that experience, then I can only dream about how wonderful that will be. Mm-hmm. So I'm holding on to that, man. It's you know, faith isn't about the outcome of a thing. It's about the decision in the moment. It's more faith in a person. So yeah. I'm putting a lot of trust in God, in that, you know, I hope that this is what everything that I'm thinking it's going to be. But even if it isn't, I wouldn't change it. You know, I feel like, you know, it's, If I do nothing else, if I stick to my path on this and die alone, then okay, you know, I'm good with that. But I'd rather have faith and believe, because I think that in and of itself can be inspiring. Because not everybody, to the point we were making earlier about why we pursue the pursuits that we go after, faith is a big part of that. You know, you didn't start this podcast to not achieve your dreams. You know, mm-hmm. and until you achieve them, I heard somebody, you know, and this will tie to it. One of the breakout sessions at Podcast Movement, there was a guy, I don't remember his name, but he gets up and he's speaking. And he gave this analogy about this Native American tribe or group of tribes. And there was one group that could always make it rain with their rain dance. Mm-hmm. And the other groups, you know, they were failing at it. And so they go over to this group and they say, what is it that you guys do? What kind of dance moves are you doing, you know, that makes it rain? We want to figure out what you're doing. And the group said, the group that could make it rain said, oh, it's not anything that we're doing. We just don't stop dancing until it starts raining. And and that thing hit me like a brick. I was like, oh, okay, I get that. It's the same concept. I can, you know, give in, you know, sell myself short, you know, give up on what I've been pursuing, or I can wait until it rains. And so that's what I'm doing. And I think if I can, even if it never rains, if I act like it's going to rain, then that'll inspire somebody, maybe in another area, to say, man, don't sell yourself short, you know, on that. You know, if you believe in something strongly enough, keep pursuing it. Keep going after it, no matter what your lying eyes tell you.
I think that's, to me, one of the, I was raised Catholic. I'm not Catholic anymore, but still, to me, just from people I've talked to and my own experience of that, it to me is one of the beauties of faith, is that so much they, when they think of somebody's faithful, that they're just focusing on kind of the outcome at life after death. And I love the way you just kind of beautifully put that, what it's also too, what your faith, and I can relate to this for my own belief, what it gives me now, what my faith gives me now, how it fills me now, how it provides purpose for my life now. It's not just about, I hit the mic, hopefully. But I don't think it's just about what the end game is. And like you said, so then if, like, you know, if it's not what you thought it was, what is that? I wouldn't trade nothing for the journey now, or something like that. It's already been so fulfilling. I can relate to that. And I think even like with dating, I sympathize with you, or empathize with you rather, in that I would say, if somebody else is listening, like for their like profile or whatever, if you are a born again Christian, put that on there. Because to me, then you have to go through this thing of like, almost like it's like a coming out,
right? Yeah, you know? Oh man, yes, yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
And we all have coming out things that are, and I say this all the time, that's kind of how like I subconsciously kind of wrap my head around interviews, is like, when was somebody's coming out moment? And it's so much, and I know those situations where sometimes if I had come out earlier about my sexuality in life to people, I would have realized it wasn't a big deal to them. Because it's the buildup that I put in it. Well, should I tell them I'm not sleeping with anybody, that I'm abstinent? Should I not? And for some people, some women might have like really had a reaction to it. But I'm sure you recognize with some women, they were kind of like, oh, okay. And you're like, dang, why didn't I just say that earlier instead of putting myself through that? So for anybody listening, you know, I think it is just... your truth is your truth. Whether you like it or not, it's your truth. So just
well put. You
know, be truthful.
Well put.
But yeah, I'm sugar. I'm so fascinated. We're an hour in practically. We haven't even gotten to a freaking question. I could ask you so much. I think this is kind of what I'm thinking. I think that we'll do, we're going to answer a question. We're going to see how it goes. But if we don't get all the questions, Omar, then I feel like we'll just need to have you on again.
I would love to come back. I would love to.
Yeah, because so now, Tales from the Friend Zone, is it up? I know I listened to the first episode. You have one episode up now?
And I've got six up now. I've been doing one a week, to kind of get it, because I knew I was going to be on with you, and I said, well, let me get some in there so that I'm ready to go. So I've got...
Probably more will be up too, because we're taping this on September 4th, and this interview probably will air, I would say, probably in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, then I'll have a bunch more up by then. Yeah, absolutely.
Great, 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 great. And that link will be in iTunes and everything like that. So, and also, I have so much to. I could talk to you just about that. And I know, my friend Erin Lillis, I think she'd be a great voiceover person. We're going to talk after we're done recording. But I swear I'm going to get to a question from somebody. And so, so the first one I'm going to get to is, we're going to answer from Carrie, age 32. And Carrie writes in, Dear Maddie, what do you think is the best way to get a guy's attention? I feel like I'm boring and I don't have much conversation to add. That might be because my friends say I'm a little depressed right now, which I can agree with. I've been single for so long, and I would love to find the one. I've started doing Tinder, and I feel like most guys are just looking for sex. Well, she hasn't met you, Omar. Carrie, prove that wrong, girl. Anyway, so Carrie goes on to say, I feel like most guys are just looking for sex, or am I being paranoid? I would love your help. This is from Carrie, age 32. What you thinking for Carrie, Omar?
You know what? It's interesting. The first thing she says is, you know, what's the best way to get a guy's attention? And she says she feels like she's boring. So what I'm hearing right there is she wants to be affirmed. She wants to feel loved. And her confidence is being impacted by that. So the first thing I would do in hearing that is say, you know, ask those why questions. Why do I want that guy's attention? You know, why do I want that more than I want attention from me? Mm-hmm. You know, for myself. So I think if Carrie works on herself, for me,
I think she needs to date herself. Yeah, I think just absolutely. What you said, she needs to date herself.
And that will be what gets a guy's attention. So think about it like this. Most of the people that you're interested in, they never know you're interested in them at first until you make yourself get on their radar. If you saw a guy that you liked, the thing that you would like about him is that he's off doing his thing, having no idea that you're watching him pursue the thing that he loves the most. Mm-hmm. That would be what gets your attention. Let's say you're at a, I don't know, you go and let's say he's a stage actor, you know, and you go to see some stage show. You don't even know that you like this guy, mm-hmm. but you see him on stage doing his thing mm-hmm. and how passionate he is about it. And that is going to be the thing that draws you. And then you meet him, and then you guys get together, and that, live happily ever after, you know, just to kind of take the fairy tale all the way out there. What initially drew you in was the fact that this guy was pursuing something that anchored him, that he was passionate about, his stage acting or fill in the blank, whatever that thing is. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is the equivalent of dating yourself. When you date you, you're going to take you to things that you like, and mm-hmm. you're going to pursue things that you know you like. And so that, I believe, anchors you. And if you can get in a habit of doing that day in and day out, eventually somebody's going to see you doing it and say, hey, that's attractive to me. That, you know, and guess what? That's not boring, you know, because I don't think Carrie's boring. I promise you, if somebody gets to know Carrie, there's some things they'll find about her that are awesome.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And she also said, you know, Carrie, what I think it kind of gives me just a little bit more depth to this question is, you know, you said that your friends say you're a little depressed and you agree with them. So I think it definitely is what I would worry for you, Carrie, if you were started dating someone. Anytime we put our self-worth in someone else, we will always come up feeling short. Always.
Yes.
And so I'm just going to say, sugar, I don't think when you're depressed is the best. That's not the best time to. I've been in those situations where you're like, I've totally been there where I'm just feeling down and blue and I have a date and I'm like, well, let's go see if this makes me feel better. Wow. You know, it's not going to probably go well. Or often what sometimes happens, sometimes you can be in this kind of negative, depressed space. And sometimes you can then attract somebody else who's also in that space. And then you're just both depressed. And that's can be what sometimes relationships can get like, they can all not be built on that, but they definitely, that can be a main component. And I love what you said. I'm going to use that all the time, Carrie. I just think, as Omar Mills says, from Tales from the Friend Zone, available on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever you listen to podcasts, Carrie, date yourself, girl. That's all date yourself to do is date yourself. I love it. Omar, I'm taking you on the road. We are going on a trip, sugar. We're doing it. All right. So this next, I think we'll be able to do all these. And we'll answer the questions, but I'm still having you on the show again because I fucking love you. All right. All right. So let's do this next question. Is from Colin, age 27. And Colin says, "Dear Maddie, I'm jealous because my best friend is gay and he gets to basically have sex whenever he wants. Straight guys don't get that lucky. I have no desire to get serious with a girl, but I feel like every girl I date wants to get attached. Do you think it's possible for women and men to be fuck buddies?"
Oh wow!
I mean, I was gonna say. I was going to say, this one's on Omar because I wouldn't know. But, Colin, I mean, man. No, I mean, and I we have friends. I think I do. I think it is possible for, you know, straight people to, you know, be intimate and to do that. Do I think it's as easy as it happens for gay guys? No. And I think there's many reasons for that. Obviously is, you know, whether you think men are more sexual or not, I don't think that. But I do think, I almost think it's about, I think, Colin, why it's just harder and what you're coming up against is that there's just much more, and you can probably speak to this too, Omar, just from your experience and also, but from being somebody who's abstaining, like, we all are impacted by cultural influences and yes. what society is telling us we should be doing. And I think that one of the things that irks me so much is that, like, okay, for instance, like, there's a show coming out on Logo, and it's like basically The Gay Bachelor, and it's called like Finding Prince Charming. It's like the single guy and looking for all these other gay guys. And like, it just came out that in his past, he used to be a sex worker, and which, no judgment, people, I would hate that anybody had to do that to support themselves, but that's what he did. And there's like a video like he posted of him like having sex or something like that or whatever. And I don't mean it as a judgment of his past, but it kind of made me just go, ugh, where I feel like, because I see this at my camp, especially with the young gay boys, we have this pressure when you're gay that it's all like sexualized and that you have to be fabulous and beautiful and like, it's just so nauseating. And so I think for Colin, I think that's honestly probably one reason why a lot of gay guys, yes, there is a thing for sex positivity and all that, but I also think there is this pressure of, well, I have to be the sexual person because that's what a gay man is. And so that's my experience. And Omar, I'm sure you can talk to about what you've seen and pressure from people in straight relationships. But I don't know. What do you think for Colin? So
I think you could not have said that better because to your point, it's the only difference is who the sexual partner is. But the pressures are the same. I think they just manifest themselves differently depending upon what your orientation is. I know this. It all boils down in a lot of ways to your sense of self-worth, your value for you. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at, like, his question, you know, it's definitely spoken like a man in his 20s. You know,
yeah. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
I miss being 20-something. I mean, you're invincible,
too.
Man. You're invincible at 20. You can,
you are.
You know, there's no thought in his mind about, you know, some of the consequences of those things. But, you know, again, there's enough out there on that. But let's say I had the ability to offer him what he thinks he wants. And that's meaningless, guilt-free, disease-free sex until he dies. Right? Mm-hmm. Let's say he can do that. Chances are, even if you get that, you're going to die sad and alone if that's the totality of your pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I was to look like again, one beautiful relationship would be perfect. It'd be a ton of work, you know, but this person would be his everything and they grow old together, die surrounded happily, you know, with family that loves them. I guarantee you he would want that one over the frivolous, you know, the older he got, he would think more about, you know what, I want that settled, that grounded, you know, that one. To me, it's if you go out there, if all you are about is, you know, just sex that doesn't mean anything, that friends with benefits idea. To me, it's like eating cereal for Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, you're still full, but you missed out on everything that was around you. Like, if you know, if you ate Captain Crunch for Thanksgiving, yeah, you ate, but you didn't really eat. And so that's kind of how that's how I look at that sort of a thing.
Well, I think it goes down to back to companionship too, because honestly, you know, it's just, yeah, I think Colin, you're, whether it's sex or not, I think they're definitely, you're looking for some type of connection. So I just, yeah, it's, I just think you said it so well, Omar. I think it's, do I think that men and women, to answer your question, can do that? Yeah, I do. I think they do it all the time. I think, in fact, I know several of my girlfriends who honestly were so kind of quote unquote cool with, like, hey, I just kind of want to like be with this person sexually, and that's about it. The guy would almost get freaked out because there's such this pressure that they so many men believe that women always get attached,
right,
and that they're, you know, and that they're needy. Because I know a lot of women that aren't. They're like, I'm, you know, I have a couple of friends who say, you know, I'm literally the coolest girl in the world. But still, I think that there's just. But I think at the end of the day, I believe this, and people can write in if you disagree. I think we are, whether it's love, connection, someone who kind of gives us meaning. I do think we're all looking for that in the end game. So whether it's just you're having sex, or whether it's just you're having coffee, or you're just spending time together, I think it's the connection that's more important, Colin. So I love that what you said, Omar. Like, what do you really, I mean, yeah, and maybe you're just horny and you just want to get your rocks off, but like, then honestly, then just masturbate.
Right.
And then if you still feel that way, then okay, then that's different. But I bet you like 99% of the time, if you just like masturbate, watch a video, whatever you do, probably that feeling of like, oh, I just want to do this will subside, and maybe something deeper will kind of emerge. That's my point.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah.
All right. See, we are speeding through these questions. So, Marissa, we're going to get to you now. Last one. Dear Maddie, this is from Marissa, age 24. Marissa says, Dear Maddie, the way you talk about your boyfriend is really sweet. I'm so happy for you. Thank you, Marissa. I love him. And you know what? Speaking, going back to Colin's question, again, like, I just was... I went to brunch the other day yesterday in West Hollywood to meet a friend. And like, of course, it's like summer in West Hollywood, so guys are wearing practically no clothes. I don't know. They're like wearing nothing. And so, but there's many, many like beautiful, like arguably some of the most beautiful men in the world live in West Hollywood. And so, and they're all around. And yeah, there is that part of me that's like, I would totally love... The part of me would love to make out with that guy and have sex. And then, but then, like, I thought that, but I wasn't going to act on it. And we had brunch, and then, of course, you see guys. And then I just got home, and I got a text from my boyfriend, and he was saying, hey, I'll just finish it up, you know, I'll be home. And, like, it was such, like, a much deeper, like, warmth in my heart that's really what, that was so much more worth it for me and so much more fulfilling where... Because I've had a lot of, you know, friends with benefits sex, Colin, but nothing has enriched my life as my relationship. And I'm not saying everybody needs to be in a relationship, but I do think everybody needs connection, like deep connection, whatever that is for you. So, Marissa, anyway, back to your question. How many people did you date before you found, before you found him? It just seems like I've dated so many guys and they're all duds. I actually didn't date a lot of guys. Like, I would maybe have sex and stuff, but I think I had like a boyfriend in college, and then I really dated another guy for like a month, but I was pretty much single for 14 years.
Wow.
So yeah, really long. And obviously I wasn't abstaining from sex, Omar. So let's back that up. But, I did. That was a problem. I backed it up. I'm sorry. Oh Lord, but yeah, I have 14 years, and I used to think that I would think, is there something wrong with me? I'm not dating anybody. And then I once went to a therapist, and he was like, "What's wrong with just you're wanting to find someone to share your life with, and you're picky about that, and you have high standards because you have high standards for yourself. What's wrong with that?" And it really turned that for me, where I realized. I wasn't alone because I had to be. I was alone because I wanted to be. And I, like you said earlier, Omar, I got so great at dating myself and just being happy. I always say, I mean, RuPaul says, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love anybody else? And that's so, so true that I just really was like, I would have days where I'm like, I'm such a nerd, but I would do something. I would go, I'm funny. Like, I'm fun. Like, I just liked myself. And that's nobody can take that away from me, whether dating them or not. It's something ingrained in me.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. You said it. I can't even, anything I'd add to that would lessen it. You nailed it. That's it right there.
Well, all right then, Dan. We're going to go on a Chatty Maddie. I do. Well, maybe we'll talk about this next time because you live in Orlando now. And so I would like to talk to your experience in Orlando. But I don't want to edit this shit, sugar. I don't like, I hate editing.
I don't
editing.
Blame you.
I
don't blame you.
I just want to post that. I do want to ask, so what prompted you to move to Orlando?
Working for Disney. I came down here. Yeah.
Oh, you actually worked for Disney.
Yeah,
nice.
I actually came down for that. I was working for Freddie Mac prior to that. And so, I mean, I was there before the collapse of the mortgage market, during the collapse of it, and would have retired there, you know, but at, you know, because I just built a house, you know, living in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And all of a sudden, you know, this company that I've been with for a number of years, ultimately it ended up being about 10. You know, yeah. The government says, hey, we're in the process of shutting this down. I mean, and that was the reality of it. So at the time, wow. I'm, you know, in, you know, just turned 40, getting ready to, you know, looking at staring at 41. And when I hit 42, I always say, you know, the two in any decade, you don't turn 22, you turn 8 years from the next milestone. You know, so not 22, mm-hmm. you're 8 years from 30. Not 32, you're 8 years from 40, and so forth. And from a vocational standpoint, you say, all right, well, if I'm this old, eventually I'm going to hit a, you know, one of those milestones where age discrimination becomes more real. You know, you start to experience yeah. a little bit more. So I felt like the only way that I was going to be able to, you know, continue to pursue and, you know, be gainfully employed and so forth was if I made a change or made a move. And so did what I had to do. And you know, just was very blessed to get an opportunity. It's very, very difficult to get into Disney. You know, and you know, when you get in, it's probably the hardest thing I've ever loved. I love what I do. Just very fortunate and blessed to be able to do it. But yeah, left everything mm-hmm. that I knew, family, friends, lived in the house that I was in for literally 13 months. The renter I have now has lived there longer. It might as well be their house. But left it all wow. to come here.
Why? And what do you do?
I'm a manager for production. So the in the digital team. So the you know anything that's on you know your website, your applications, anything that has a digital interface in the parks, all that rolls through to you know the team that I work on.
Sugar, you are a smarty. You are just, a smart. And how interesting, too, that because you weren't going outside as a kid, your love of, like, stories and how to craft stories and even He-Man and Thundercats, I mean, you end up working right. for a company that started as a cartoon
yeah,
company.
No, it's it was part of the choice in, I mean, you don't leave.
There's definitely a path to all this that we
yeah,
don't know.
Yeah, it's like I was saying, telling you earlier, what I would have chosen to do, it's interesting because it wasn't my first choice. There were two opportunities, and I didn't know when I was talking to my career counselor at the time that they even had these kind of jobs at Disney. You know, I didn't, you know, again, this was a job I'm doing at Freddie Mac, and you don't think, mm-hmm. when you think Disney, you think, oh, if I'm going to do that, I'm drawing something, I'm, you know, or doing something to that, you know, to that degree, you only think of the creative side of it. You don't think, oh, wait, this is a global company that's going to have these types of things. And so the career counselor I'm talking to is like, well, no, they've got these kind of jobs. And when she had asked me what types of things I was into, and I started talking about the superheroes and different things, originally I was going to do a similar job. I applied for a similar job at Marvel. And that was the one cool. I wanted. And because that was in New York. And they were allowing, one of the caveats in there was that you could telework a couple days out of the week. So my thought was, oh, wow, I don't have to sell my house. I can take the train up, you know, because I'm right in Virginia at the time. And mm-hmm. let's see how that goes. And she's like, well, there's another job that I want you to apply for as well, but that one's in Orlando. And I remember saying, man, I'm not going to Orlando. I just built a house. You know, this is New mm-hmm. York. This is Marvel. That's the one I want to do. And, you know, but it was Orlando that called. And then one thing led to another. Next thing I know, I'm selling everything. And I'm moving here, you know, but that goes back to God's got a better dream than you do. You know, for me, yeah. Who knows, you know, what that would have led to. But I wouldn't trade what I'm doing now for anything. It's hard. Don't get me wrong. It's not easy. You know, it's magical for a reason because a lot of people put a lot of hard work into it.
A lot of work. Yeah. I always say that. I always think, oh, Disneyland is so expensive. And then when I go, I'm like, this is why it's so expensive, because they have to pay all the people to do all yeah. this stuff that makes it this amazing experience. It's worth it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's yeah. not Six Flags
no,
Sugars.
No. No, it's not.
It's not. Well, okay. Well, so let's go to... Oh, Omar, so much I could go, but that's all right. We're going to save it for show two. So we'll do another show in a couple of months. And okay, but for Chatty Maddie questions, so same questions I ask everybody every week. Chatty Maddie, number one, what's your most memorable childhood smell or favorite memory?
This is going to sound horrible, but it's gasoline.
No, a lot of people say that. Diesel. That's one of my favorite because of my dad, diesel. But why is yours gasoline?
I have no idea what it was about gasoline, just getting high on the fumes or whatever it was as a kid. You know,
yeah.
And my mom would yell at me. She'd go, you know, don't smell that stuff. You know, it's going to fry your brain cells. I didn't care. You know, you pull up. And I mean, what's interesting now, the emissions are so much better now. You don't really experience it as much. But in the 70s. Oh man, you'd pull up and pump gas, and it was you literally just fall asleep, take a nap, you know, have to eat chips or something. Man, it was literally a high going in to pulling up to the gas station. So that is probably that and my grandfather smoked cigars, and so from the minute I was here till he smoked for the entire time I knew him. He died when he was about 88. So back in 04 we lost him, but you know, again, here's a guy, every day I saw him, he had a cigar. And cigars, unless you smoke them and enjoy them, they make me gag. But when he would first light up, the initial few puffs actually had you were getting more of the tobacco or whatever it was, but that was actually pretty pleasant. And then all of a sudden it turned on you. Like the more you sat there, the sicker you got. But that initial light up, I remember that smell. And it was actually a very pleasant smell. And, it, you know, again, the particular brand he smoked remind me of him.
No, I love that. That's a good story. All right. Well, Chatty Maddie, number two, what would be the name of your memoir?
Tales from the End Zone.
That'd be a different book if I wrote it, sugar. But that's a good one. I like that. Okay, Chatty Maddie number three. What's the best piece of advice you wished you had taken earlier life?
I wish I had listened to myself when I told me to quit my job to go to New York and not come back until I was drawn for Marvel Comics.
Sugar, we are this. I have a Wonder Woman kitchen.
Really?
So like, yes, I'm a huge comic book person. Like. Huge. I interviewed Mark Asquith, who was at Podcast Movement, and we were supposed to talk about podcast questions. We ended up just talking about Rebirth.
Rebirth, yes.
DC Rebirth, yes. Yeah. I'm telling you, we are two peas, two pods. But yeah, you can draw. So I can't draw at all.
Can draw. I haven't. Now, what's interesting is that was all I was known for back in the day. Again, growing up and you can't go outside, so I'm drawing. And music eventually replaced that when I started getting more into that. So I don't draw like I used to because I became a musician. But at the time, I actually dropped out of college when I was 22. Did not go back until I was 34 and finished at 38. Had to basically do it again. So long story there, but suffice it to say, at the time, I knew I was getting ready to, you know, that I wasn't doing well. I just didn't know what I wanted to do, who I wanted to be. I was young and just didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. But I knew I liked drawing. And I remember sitting with my mom and telling her, like, I really want to do this. And she was like, have you lost your mind? Are you crazy? She's like, And she basically said, as a loving mother, you know, what she meant to say was, you've got to get better and put more time into your craft if you want to be good enough to go work for Marvel. What I heard was, you're not good enough to work for Marvel. And that isn't what she said, but that was what my sensitivity heard. And so I gave it up, you know, and went and got a regular job and so forth. But the time to do all that stuff is when you're 21. And if I had a kid right now and he was 21 and he's like, Dad, I want to go make movies. Man, go make them. Go do it. You know, because to me, until you're at least 32, you know, you've got time. you know, to get it, you know, to get it together, to get it right, to go pursue. And for all I know, if, you know, if you go and you pursue it and you want it badly enough, the worst you're going to come out of that situation with is some stories about how, you know, you tried to go pursue what you loved. You know, it's mm-hmm. not supposed to work out for everybody. But again, it's not about the outcome of the thing. It's the pursuit. I mean, all life is the journey, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. that's something that I wish, because I never really gave it its full shot, you know, at a time mm-hmm. where I was of the age where I could have had the energy and, you know, the time and, you know, the risks weren't as high to go and pursue something like that. You know, instead I chose a mm-hmm. safe and easy path. And that's definitely something that I wish I could go back and sort of get a mulligan on.
Hmm. I love that. I love that. I love that. And I love too that you're the first person to answer that question. You wished you had listened, because then that resonated with me. Some of the best advice I wish I had taken was what I told myself that I didn't listen to. Everybody always talks about, oh, a person said this or a teacher said this. But I think you hit out so much of the great advice that we can get. It really does come from ourselves if we just don't let if we listen to ourselves. I work with a lot of actors and creative types here in LA doing life coaching and stuff because my master's, you know, is in therapy. And so I always say, I feel like we've kind of got two voices that are driving us. And this is for everybody. I feel like we have the critic and then we have the muse. And so instead of listening to that muse, which is what inspires us to be joyful and to connect and to feel like we're doing something worthwhile, and what we listen to that critic, which is where the fear and the doubt and any shame of past mistakes comes in. They all kind of come together as this character that often writes our story instead of us writing ourselves.
That
you know?
You're on it, Maddie. That's, I've never heard it put like that, but man, that's spot on.
Well, that's called a $60,000 master's degree. I'm still paying off, sugar. That's what that's called. But yeah. All right, Chatty Maddie number four. We got two more. What day would be your Groundhog Day? So what day was so awesome that you're like, I could do this day every day?
I'd probably say my first day of college, freshman year. And again, that's probably an odd day to pick. But at 18, you haven't started class yet. You're walking around. You're lost. You got a map. I mean, again, this is 1990, you know, for me. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's no phones. You know, you got a map of the school and you don't know where you're going and you're walking around and I've got a mm-hmm. giant Walkman with a cassette tape in it. And so I would totally redo that day over and over again. I feel like that window of 18 to 25, you know, you don't wake up with random pains that you don't know, but like just because you slept funny mm-hmm. and like, you know, you're invincible, exactly. You know, those times are wasted on us in our youth. You know, you look back on that having learned some things, and that's definitely a day I would go back to and say, yeah, let me redo that day. I'd do that day over and over.
I love that. That's a good one. Never heard that. Okay, well, Chatty Maddie number five, when are you most inspired? And some, this is in life or by people or time of day. When are you most inspired?
When I'm doing something for somebody else. And I know that sounds contrived and so forth, but I've really thought about it, and that's it. The, you know, think about it. You know, if you're serving at like a soup kitchen or something, and I did that once back in 2010, was at this, now, interesting thing about this, I was at Laguna Beach, you know, so if you're ever deciding that you want to be like homeless, that's the spot to do it in. Is that Laguna Beach. It was December. It was beautiful. And I'm thinking, man, this is different. I'd never been out there at that time. And when I was there, supposedly there were all these mudslides, you know, going on. But it wasn't really as bad as CNN like was reporting at the time. I'm watching it and it looks mm-hmm. like Armageddon on TV, and you go outside and it's really just some mud, you know, on that.
Yeah.
But we're there serving, and it was real interesting because I had a mindset going in of like who all was going to be in there, and you get in there and it's very diverse. Like, you know, you had every race, every age, everybody's circumstances and situations were slightly different, and you're in there and you're serving meals, and it's one of those things where it's one of the more selfless things you can do. The other time was when I went and served at Walter Reed Hospital. It was for Wounded Warriors. We did a Wounded Warrior picnic day. My church was involved in that, and I, you know, went out, took off work, and went to do it. And there's nothing quite as humbling as bringing food to a vet who doesn't want you to serve them. You know, like, you know, you, here's, you're, imagine you're sitting with a guy. He's 21. He's a baby. He's lost his legs. You know, and all he wants to do is go back over and keep fighting for your freedom. You know, to go, because he feels like he left his unit or his guys behind, and so he wants to go back over and do that. And they tell you when you go in, you know, in terms of getting coached up, that all these guys want to do is have a conversation. That was all any of them wanted. You try and say, hey, can I go get you something to drink? Can I bring you something? No. I just want you, Omar, I just want you to sit here. I just want you to listen to me. I just want to talk with you. I just want to get to know you. That's all these guys wanted. And it blew my mind. And it was, there was nothing for me more inspiring than that. You know, it's as cool as it is to pursue the stuff that I love. We're wired, man, to be givers. We're wired to give our lives away. You ever notice that you go to a funeral and nobody ever brings out like pictures of how much money and stuff that the person who died made or had? It's all about people getting up saying, this guy gave this to me, or he said this to me. It's those experiences. It's how much of their lives they gave away. And to me, if the thing that you want to pursue for you can somehow be, if you can make enough of it that when you go, there's enough for everybody to share, then you got it right. That to me, that's what I want to do. That's what I'm pursuing, or I hope to pursue, is to do life so awesomely that there's enough to give away, you know, and then that there's something that's the legacy, you know, at the end of it. That's when I'm most inspired.
Well, you have given to me today, and that is the truth.
Thank you.
So I'm like, I'm awake. I'm like excited about just like the day. Not that I wasn't before, but I just, again, it's just, it's always wonderful to make a new friend and just to feel less alone in the world and feel like, some, you know, and this was just, you are wonderful. You're just wonderful. I'm just so happy that we connected in this, and it's going to happen even more. So, So tell everybody where they can find all things Omar Mills.
The Twitter, at Omar K Mills, so Omar, the letter K as in Kevin, Mills. Facebook.com, you know, in the slash is just OK Mills 1. I don't know who the other OK Mills is that got it before I could get, but you know, you have to throw the 1 on for that. Of course, there's Thamro.com, that's Thamro.com. And then for the Friend Zone podcast, it's just tales.zone. So www.tales.zone, which I thought was kind of convenient that they just came out with that .zone domain right when I was doing this. It's like they knew.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
That
I couldn't get
weird.
Friend.zone. I tried. But tales.zone was there. So I got that.
No, I like it. I like it a lot. And of all of these show notes will be in the description for everybody. So, well, Omar Mills, thank you so much. Go to Tales of the Friend Zone, listen to his show, subscribe to his show if you like it. If you do really like it, the best thing you can do for Omar and for this show as well is leave a review on iTunes. That is so important, especially for a new show starting, because you can do new noteworthy and that kind of stuff and really... it just gets you out there more for people. So go to iTunes or Stitcher or however, but definitely iTunes is really kind of the best place that you could leave a review either on your phone or on your computer. So please do that. But Omar, thank you so much.
This was awesome.
What a beautiful Sunday morning. I feel like I just been to church, sugar. You took me there. So... Well, and for the rest of you, you know the drill. Go to DearMaddieShow.com for questions and all things Dear Maddie. And do something for someone this week. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Wires going everywhere.
It's just wires. Just focus. Are you okay?
This isn't... This- is an uneven environment.
Well, I'm recording. Hello, everybody. This is Maddie. Thank you for listening to the show, and I'm with Poodle.
You just got me at my worst.
I love it. Patrick's going to love this shit. Okay, everybody, you're probably wondering why Jake is here.
Why does everyone enjoy my torment?
You're wondering why Jake is here, because we are...
No, they're not. They're happy.
They're happier because we're plugging our new podcast and YouTube show.
We've finally joined forces.
Gay forces. It's like...
Superman and...
Queer Wars. Rogue
He-Man
One.
He-Man and Teela.
Oh.
You're Teela.
I love Teela. She was my favorite.
I want to be that cat.
You're...
or Orko.
You are Cringer.
Oh, I am Cringer.
Yes. Oh, you are Orko, actually. You are. So, everybody... Start.
I had an Orko magic trick.
Focus, Sybil. Focus!
That my father, no. I think my father was so angry that I would show him all the time, and he just told me to stop doing it for him because he wasn't impressed.
Because he knew you were a Mary. That's what it was.
And it wasn't helping.
That wasn't helping.
Me doing magic tricks was a step from a drag show.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
I kind of see that now.
Okay. Yeah. So we are, this show, TBT Time, again, on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Orko.
It's a new podcast, so you have to subscribe to it. But also you can watch at a YouTube channel. We have a new YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jake and Maddie.
We think you're going to like this.
We think you're going to like it.
This is kind of us uninhibited dishing about campy TV.
This isn't about helping people. We're doing that on this show. This is about recapping of trash and theater.
It is about helping people. We're helping people how to think. Because thinking other than us is not good.
Not good.
And so, we have good ideas. So.
We do. And we're going to recap the new CW show, Riverdale, which is based on the Archie comics.
So already... We don't know what we're getting into.
We don't.
It could be a complete shit show.
We picked this because the guys are hot.
Honestly, that was the qualifications.
It was the qualifications. So.
And it was something we could kind of obsess over and make catcalls like women, menopausal women in their 60s, which is we're
you know
a step
I think
away
that,
from.
I think that's going to be our best time. I really do.
God, I can't wait till I can wear caftans.
I'm just wearing muumuus and flip-flops. Oh. Although I worry about flip-flops because my balance.
Elastic waistbands.
Exactly. Ugh. Exactly. So that's the show. That's the show, everybody. So subscribe to it, TBT Time, on iTunes, Stitcher, everything. You know, look in the show notes and you can find it. And again, thank you for listening to Dear Maddie's show. And the Riverdale show comes on Thursday, June 26th. So the podcast will air on Friday, June 27th. So be sure to check that out. And we will see you again next week.
And listen to Riverdale.
Listen to Riverdale. Podcast. Okay, bye.